Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Now, last night, the documentary Rugby on Trial aired on BBC One. It examined whether enough has been done to protect rugby players from the devastating impacts of concussion and whether parents can be sure their children will be safe playing rugby at school. One of the people behind the documentary was Sam Peters from Concussed Media, who joins me on the line now. Sam, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
So tell me about this topic that I've alluded to that the documentary explored. What conclusions did the documentary come to?
That's a good question. I think as much as conclusions, it was presenting a case that things that should have been done in the early stages of the professional game of rugby, which was in the late 1990s, early 2000s, really weren't done when it came to looking after the players and recognising that as the game changed radically in a short period of time, that was going to come with consequences, essentially, consequences for the players' physical and mental health. And it presented a picture that questioned some of the decisions made in those early days of professionalism and questioned whether, as I say, more should have been done.
Talk to us about some of the people who feature in the documentary.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got guys like Neil Spence, ex-players, who basically went through the professional game in its entirety, as in played their entire careers as professionals, who are now suffering significant mental health problems, which have been directly linked to the repeated concussions that they suffered. You know, it's things like depression, suicidal tendencies, mood swings, anxiety, but problems with day-to-day function, really. And that was a story I was telling 11, 12 years ago when I was rugby correspondent of the Mail on Sunday. I was looking at what had gone on in the NFL, where a huge legal case came about in 2013 around exactly this issue, where the NFL settled out of court, not admitting liability, but essentially put a huge multi-million pound slush fund in place, essentially to help players with long-term neurocognitive problems. And my argument was always that rugby could see this happen if it didn't move fast in those early days. And, you know, I think there's a reasonably strong case to argue that they didn't move fast enough in those early days and should have put more protections in place.
Yeah, I always remember the analogy around that time. Was it an onion inside a jar that they kept talking about bashing, and that, you know, that happening over and over is bound to cause some damage? You've also authored a book called Concussed, looking at head injuries in rugby. So what more could have been done to protect players?
Well, I think actually refereeing the legal high tackle, you know, I mean, they essentially referees just stopped refereeing high tackles for a period of time because they became so normalised. Doctors stopped taking players off when they had clear signs of concussion, knocked out completely in some places and allowed to play on when in a boxing fight the fight would have been stopped. But in rugby it became completely normal for players with clear signs of brain damage to carry on playing. So should have been much more robust in the way that that was policed as well, and medics and doctors should have been empowered, and directors of rugby and coaches who were interested in one thing and one thing alone, and that was winning, and that who didn't have any kind of apparent care for the long-term effects on the players, should have been kept away from the doctors. And that wasn't the case. And in some cases still today, there's too much influence of directors of rugby on the medical staff. So, you know, there were some obvious things going on as the game changed radically. It didn't feel right at the time. And looking back now, I guess with a more forensic lens, which we are doing, and sadly the legal case is doing as well, you know, it is really challenging some of those practices that went on then.
You're saying looking back, there is learning, but does that infer that things with rugby are different now and that there are more safety protocols taken for head injuries in rugby now?
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely different. It's better. better now than it was. It's not as good as it should be. There's still far too much rugby played at the top of the game. The top professionals play too much rugby. Everyone in the game knows that. The 30-game limit in England, where I've done most of my work, is not policed. Essentially, we saw that in the summer when Mauro Itoje played against the All Blacks. It was his 31st game of the year. That's too much rugby. He shouldn't have played in that game. But even when some of these kind of protocols, as they've called, are brought in, they're not policed properly. And a lot of people have sort of taken the view that player welfare is some sort of, you know, soft kind of nanny state type interventionism, when it's actually designed to look after the athletes so that their careers are sustained for longer, but also they play better because they're healthier. And so for me, that's a piece which needs to be focused on.
Yes, it's a win-win there. Yes, that's Sam Peters there, rugby correspondent, author of Concussed, and one of the people behind the documentary which aired on BBC last night called Rugby on Trial. I want to bring in Alex Popham, a former Welsh rugby international who was diagnosed with early onset dementia at age 40. His line has dropped. We'll try and return back to Alex. But we have Professor John Fairclough, former president of the British Sports Trauma Association and a spokesperson at Progressive Rugby. John, you're very welcome to the programme. Will anything change on the foot of this documentary?
I think it will bring an awareness to a tremendous amount of people who have heard about the problems from the newspaper, but I think the documentary brings forward the reality. You see the suffering that people have had when they didn't really expect it. They were playing a sport. They knew they were going to have injuries. We all do when we play sport or are looking after sport. But the serious effects it has on families, the psychological health, and of course you'll interview Alex Slater, because he's one of our group, and we see the tremendous difficulty there is in dealing with the effects of neurocognitive disease in the long term.
And I suppose people like Alex, and as you say, we'll let him use his own voice in a moment if we can get the line back up, but that perhaps they didn't know of these risks. You know it's high impact, you know there is a possibility of injury, but not something that's going to change the course of your life perhaps forever in this way, particularly when it comes to head injury.
Yes, I'm an orthopaedic surgeon, but also a rugby player at amateur level. And we knew that there was always injury risk. And we knew people had head injuries. And in fact, orthopaedic surgeons used to be responsible for concussion. It wasn't neurosurgeons. And the early part of my career as a consultant, we looked after the rugby concussions. We were always aware that there were problems with people not knowing where they are after they were injured. And in the programme last night, there's Dr. O'Driscoll, who I know well. And he, with Roger Evans, and were part of the International Rugby Board. And quite inexplicably, there was a sudden change from the protective 3 weeks absence after a head injury to a few days. Now, that was a retrograde step. And I think the important aspect is that we have to look not just at the very severe head injuries, but the amount of a concussion that people have in a subconcussive element. In other words, you bash your head, you don't know you've lost at some form of neurocognitive function, but it's repeated. And that repeated difficulty where is going to be something that can't be measured.
Yes, yes,
but
John.
It's causing a problem.
I'll have to leave it there just to try and fit Alex in. But thank you so much for coming on, Professor John Fairclough there. And as I say, we're joined by Alex Popham now, former Welsh rugby international. And Alex, you were diagnosed with early onset dementia at the age of 40. Tell us a little bit about the impact that diagnosis has had.
Yeah, that was 4 years ago now. And it was very difficult at the time. But it gave me and us as a family answers of why certain symptoms and things I was struggling with. So we've made some changes and in my life, and it's been able to control it, really.
And do you think enough was done to protect you, and is enough done to protect players?
To both those, no. We weren't educated on this. We weren't told. The only thing we were asked after a traumatic brain injury was, do you feel sick? And if you didn't feel sick, you were given a splash of water in the face and sniffing salts and told to get back out there. And that was in training and in games. And current players also, they're only adding more games to the schedule. Players are getting bigger, stronger, faster, so this is only going in one direction. And unless they control the controllables, and that's the amount of contact they do in training, when there is a traumatic brain injury, not rush the player back in 7 days, give them 28 days to rest, and manage mandatory amounts of contact in training, this is going to continue into the future.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Alex Popham, former Welsh rugby international, diagnosed with early onset dementia at the age of 40. Thank you very much for coming on. And it is an uncomfortable conversation to have. We have a massive rugby community in this country and have been very successful worldwide with it. But is enough being done to protect the players? There are many who have successful careers with their health, but I'd like to get your thoughts on what was discussed there. You can text 53106. It'll cost you 30 cents, or you can email lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on Newstalk.